This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Good afternoon. At the tone, Pacific Daylight Time will be...
It's 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
One step closer to my own personal hell.
This is Primetime on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan.
We expect the best. We're not afraid to break someone. Do you hear me?
Primetime is your source for the best in local, regional, and national sports.
Go ahead and clap. Mediocrity deserves applause.
Isaac Rod.
I'm miserable. I had to get up at 10 o'clock this morning.
Jason Sakanic.
I'm a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude.
Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
Welcome in. Hot 5 at 5 coming up here in just a few moments. And then we're going to take a look ahead at the Pac-12 title game coming up on Friday right here on The Fan. No show Friday, by the way, but we will have more coverage than you could possibly handle for that Pac-12 title game. We're going to go down to Utah. Hans Olsen, 12-8 of the Zone, will join us, give you a Utah perspective on that, and then we'll go out to Matt Prehm for the local look, and we'll talk to him about what's, kind of the Duck side of things, and we can talk to him about the Joe Moorhead news as well, even though that's not official just yet.
And tomorrow's loaded as well. We're going to fit two shows into one with No Show Friday.
Yep.
Got Jason Quick, got Joey Harrington, got our picks with Dave Bartu, got Sending Your College Football DVR. All loaded into a 4-hour show.
A lot to get to in the next day and a half.
Yes.
Oh.
Hot topics, hot opinions.
Oh, golly, I'm hot today.
And hot air. It's time for the Hot 5 at 5.
That's hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 on Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
No, I mean it. That's very hot.
The Hot 5 at 5. Refreshed on the Fan by Frost Brewed Coors Light. Number five.
Good news, bad news for the Blazers. They blew out the Pistons last night. No Damian Lillard in that one. And they are now officially 11-11 on the season and are the definition of mediocrity. And judging by the attendance, no one really cares. What you may care about, though, Nasir Little is going to be out at least a week with that ankle sprain. Also, Lillard had an MRI that confirmed basically tendonitis on that abdominal strain. Said he is going to be out for 10 days and then is going to be reevaluated after that. That's the scary part, is anytime you get a Blazer injury and you hear the dreaded reevaluation in 10 days, but this is something that Lillard has been dealing with for seemingly a number of years. So, and we haven't heard that it's anything other than just a strain and aggravation of that. So fingers crossed, it's just 10 days for him, but both of those guys should miss a couple games here on this homestand.
Number four.
Mike, I don't know if this frustrates you as much as me, but we're going to have another damn lockout coming in Major League Baseball as the contract negotiations for the new collective bargaining agreement broke down after 7 minutes today.
Yep.
Why can't Major League Baseball pull their head out? This is over, what, service time?
Well, it's over a ton of things.
And free agency. I mean, it's ridiculous. This goes back to, like, the COVID thing. Every other league was able to get their S figured out except for baseball, seemingly in a timely fashion.
So it's frustrating. But I read a great article, I think it was from Jeff Passan, where he said, this is just part of doing business at this point with Major League Baseball. The time to be worried about the lockout is not now.
Yeah, because they're not missing any time.
The time to be worried about the lockout is if it's still going in late February and you're getting close to spring training.
But this is the pain.
That's when you should worry. Right now, this gives them a time to figure it out, And let's hope that they get it figured out within the next month or so when we're back in January.
But this
and it's
is the
all
thing
okay.
that pisses me off is Major League Baseball always says this. They came out and said, hey, we're going to do the lockout because we want a sense of urgency. And then there will be no sense of urgency until a week before the season. And there'll be like a mad scramble to try to get something done. Thursday Night Football got a lot more interesting. Looks like Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb for the Dallas Cowboys are trending towards playing. And more importantly, get ready. Taysom Hill finally we'll get the start at quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, and then Hooray. We can all sit around and continue to wonder what the hell Sean Payton, who's seemingly a smart guy, seems to think and is in love with Taysom Hill.
Can it be much worse than Trevor Siemian?
Yeah, I think it can. He looked good the first game.
That he did.
Yeah, right? Oh, and by the way, if it couldn't get any worse for the Seattle Seahawks, they've now signed Adrian Peterson because Adrian Peterson...
That's better than Rashad Penny and Alex Collins.
Is he?
No.
Unless you got a time machine, just go get Bo Jackson while you're at it.
I mean, Seattle's done, right? So yeah. I guess it doesn't really matter what they do.
Yeah, they're finished. We're just waiting for the inevitable Russell Wilson to bitch and moan and then try to force his way out.
Number two.
The news we've been hearing for what seemingly the last week or so, and it has not been officially announced, but basically sources everywhere reporting that Joe Moorhead will leave Oregon as their offensive coordinator and will move on to be the head coach at Akron. Now, he has been a coach at Akron before, but let's be honest, this was never a great fit. There was a lot of it seemingly internal conflict between Moorhead and Cristobal about the style of offense that they want to run. Got to believe that there is something to this. Maybe if you want to throw in a side of he had the health issue and maybe this is the place where he's more comfortable or it's less stressful. I don't buy that, though. Going to be a head coach of a really, really bad Akron team as opposed to being an offensive coordinator. And by the way, this will probably be a pay cut going to take the head coach at Akron job as opposed to being the coordinator. The only thing we don't know is necessarily the timing of this. We're assuming this, obviously, he's going to stay on for the Pac-12 title game.
Well, the report says after Friday, he'll leave.
Yes. So whether it's the Rose Bowl or the Vegas Bowl or whatever, that Moorhead will not be the offensive coordinator going forward. And that we'll get the announcement then.
Number one.
And the number one is there was also some scuttlebutt that we could have an announcement any day now about the expansion of the college football playoff.
And
not so fast.
No.
So apparently,
the same as it has been.
Apparently, they were very close to coming to an agreement to expand before the 2026 when it would become a blank slate and they could basically start out from scratch. It's a little more challenging now because if they want to expand before that, they have to work in existing contracts. And so I guess in principle, they have an agreement there. They want the 12-team expansion. The opening rounds will be played on home campuses. They won't be played in neutral sites in bowl games.
I like the home field advantage.
Well, and you got to remember, too, that some of this is just travel for fan bases, and you still want to have great environments. You know, you look at what happened Michigan and Ohio State. Like, that's the sort of environment that you want for a college football game or the Iron Bowl. You don't necessarily want... you don't want a first-round game in a neutral site and ask fans to travel, you know, three times. You may be stretching fan bases a little thin. So 12-team expansion, opening round games played on home campuses. I guess the hang-up being how do you rope in the existing New Year's Six Bowls on some sort of rotating basis or what roles they have? And then in a stunning development, the Power Five want automatic bids for the Power Five champions and one other, seemingly the Mountain West or the American Conference. Basically, the highest ranked non-Power Five would get an automatic berth. So you'd have six automatic berths, six at-large berths, and the non-Power Five conferences obviously don't want that. They want it just be, you know, the top-ranked teams get in. And so apparently there's a bit of a sticking issue with that. They're going to meet again in January at this point, but... You're very close. In fact, Brett McMurphy had a tweet today, which has been deleted since, but he said that they were on the verge of getting the deal done and just couldn't quite get over those last couple hurdles. But it looks like, if the reports are to be believed, that the expansion could happen sooner than later, and maybe we'll get one in January when they meet again.
Also just saw this. This is not from anybody that I've actually seen before, so I'm not going to say this is a report. as much as just there's some rumblings on social media that Marcus Freeman will be the new head coach of Notre Dame.
Yeah, and he would be their defensive coordinator.
Yes, they are promoting from within, if that is true. It's a couple people I've never heard of before, so not really ready to say, like, it's happening, but there's rumblings.
There's been some talk about that. And remember, Notre Dame also said they were not going to hire a coaching search firm for this. So that would make sense. He was a rising star, came over from Cincinnati, although some people thought it would be interesting if Luke Fickell went from Cincinnati to Notre Dame and Freeman went from Notre Dame back to Cincinnati, then maybe that would be a fit. But he is one of the rising stars in the coaching game. The Hot 5 at 5 brought to you by Coors Light. Saturdays are made for football. Crack a Coors Light. Forget about your 9-to-5 and focus on the Ducks' 4th-and-1. Coors Light! Mountain cold refreshment. When we come back, let's take a look at the Pac-12 title game. We'll go down to Utah. Hans Olsen, 12-8 of the Zone, joins us next to the Utah perspective. You're listening to 1080 The Fan.
Prime time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Pac-12 title game coming up on Friday right here on The Fan. So we're going to do a back-to-back look here, get a Oregon perspective coming up next with Matt Preem. But let's head on down to good old Salt Lake City. You can hear this man on 1280 The Zone, a former teammate of mine, and also the deliverer of the greatest ass-kicking I've ever taken in a football fight in my life when he hit me with a judo hip toss and then some sort of rock-bottom knee that completely ended that. That's the quickest football fight I've ever been in. Like, I'm not saying I'm the toughest guy in the world, but I did not have a problem throwing hands, and I thought that, you know, I thought I was a fairly tough guy. That thing ended immediately. I just remember making a wheezing sound and then laying down on the ground and being like, that's the end of that.
Well, the last thing I remember is getting hit by like 5 guys behind me and thinking, holy cow, Souk has a lot of friends.
Yeah, when you see an ass kicking like that and you know, when you hear an audible like, then everyone knows they better jump in or it's going to keep happening. I will never forget that because we were blocking. I was blocking him and I went with a patented Sukanic dirty, probably hands to the face maneuver, or maybe some sort of rib shot as I was known for. And it did not go over well.
Well, so I grabbed fame by being the only guy that Lavelle Edwards has ever kicked out of the spring game. I just remember his, like, the utter look of disgust, because after you went down, I took 2 steps back and I ran and jumped as high as I could and brought the knee down because, you know, I was as dirty as you were. And those are good old times.
It's funny what you remember, man. I mean, we're both old men now and, you know, we're doing this for a living. And I don't remember scores of games and I don't remember win-loss records. But I remember a hip toss and a knee drop. I remember that thing like it was yesterday. It's just,
well, I remember watching this big old freshman walk into a weight room, and I'm over there doing shoulder press with Chris Hoke, and Chris is like, "Hey, I think that's the new center." And I look over and you do that saunter that you do, and you put every plate in the room on that leg press sled, and then you stack like Satiminali and margin hooks and everybody else on it, and you start leg pressing. We're like, who's this guy? Who's he think he is with his leg presses?
Yeah, that was my attempt to be a badass, and then it was cured. It was cured real fast.
You should see how tiny his legs are now. They're so small.
Every team needs someone that puts someone in their place when the young guy comes in and is like, hey, watch this. Well, Hans Olsen was that guy. It's good to catch up, but let's take a look at this, you know, Utah-Oregon. I've seen the Utes play a couple times this year, and, you know, I remember watching them play BYU, wasn't that impressed. Oregon State, that was a game that could have gone either way. I felt pretty confident in the Oregon game. I thought, you know, I know Utah's good, but, you know, you don't really see teams that are more physical than Oregon. I thought athletically Oregon was going to be superior because when they've played in the past, the athletes tend to stand out a little bit more on the Oregon side. And then they go down there and just, they get Hans Olsen knee dropped and the thing's over before the half. So let me ask you the question. Do you think that that's the reality of these two teams, or is that the best Oregon played and is about as bad, about as best as Utah has played and about as bad as Oregon has played?
Well, it's the best Utah's played for sure. And, Suk, I think that Oregon State game was a wake-up call to Utah's manhood, because Oregon State, I felt like they roughed them up with just power on the insides and really beat them in the run game and beat them soundly, blocked every punt they tried to punt, scored off of every punt that they tried to kick. And I do believe they came out of that game like, oh. And I think Kyle Whittingham looked at that film and was like, nope, that's not how it's going to happen anymore. And I think Andy Ludwig, the offensive coordinator, came out of that game with a new design. And they put this, they ran all 13 personnel, three tight ends. Yep. They've got multiple block schemes off the three tight ends. When they don't have 13 personnel, they've got 12 personnel. And they ran so many different variations of H-back motions and inside traps and counter looks and then screens off of those looks. And even I sat there like, geez, I'm glad I'm not Oregon's defense.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm not a defensive tackle on that field, because you're getting blocked from every angle. And then watching what they did to Kayvon Thibodeau, like I went into that game, I'm like, hey, this guy's a pretty good defensive end.
Yeah.
And he's going against a new offensive tackle. It's a guard that was actually and they had another transferred in Utah, and he was the backup to another guy. And they didn't just block him man on. They blocked him with all kinds of scheme. And I think the Oregon State was a big-time wake-up call for them. And they had a couple of games under their belt to get their confidence. And then they put all three phases together. And it was an absolute all three phases whooping of Oregon.
Yeah, and you look after the Oregon State game, which was close there, right? And then the block punt, and it kind of got away from there at the end. But, I mean, they rolled UCLA, demolished Stanford, Arizona, the beatdown of Oregon, and then Colorado was whatever. So, I mean, it really is, when you look at this Utah, I mean, it looks like a completely different team from when we saw them at the start of the year. When you think about that, right, they started out, 1-2, losing to BYU and San Diego State, of all teams.
Yeah. Yeah, and probably another wake-up call for them. So, you know, they went through all this trauma, and it's been bad, Sue. So
yeah.
It's been really bad. It's hard, been hard on the community, and I know it's been really hard on the team. Were you in Provo when we lost Terrence Harvey?
Yep.
One of our
I was a freshman.
Yeah, and you remember it's just tough. You know, you lose a teammate in the middle of the season, and it shakes everybody's guts. And they lost two, and they didn't just lose, you know, a couple of part timers. They lost two integral parts of what they were doing, and so it felt like that's been a big distraction. And BYU and San Diego State was just a painful thing to watch, and it's all kind of shook loose. And, you know, it was weird. They had that Baylor quarterback that was a transfer that came in with 10,000 yards under his belt and beat out this Cam Rising, this freshman.
Yeah.
And he had a couple of bad games. They benched him midway through that San Diego State game and threw in Cam, and that kid was gone the next day. He was out.
Yeah.
He quit.
And been a different team ever since. So when you look at this, they always give you the adage that it's hard to beat a team twice. But when you actually look at the numbers in college football, it's actually not. It's overwhelming. In regular season teams that play twice, I think it's like it's almost 70% that you do win twice. And in the Power Five, it's even more than that. So that adage is I kind of throw it out the window. So when you look at a team that just played, a week ago, basically,
mm-hmm.
Do you expect something different? How confident is Utah going in? Do you think that there's going to be different wrinkles thrown at what sort of adjustments, or do you just think that Utah at this point is just the better team?
Oh no, I think there's going to be adjustments, because I think Oregon's manhood was tested, and I've got to imagine that they're ticked off. And I was thinking about this. I'm like you. I took a couple of ass kickings on a football field. I took a couple of bad ones. I don't know if you were there when Jones came in with Virginia.
Oh yeah.
And oh my gosh.
Yep. I played with him in Tampa later on, and he still was making fun of me all those years later. that guy ran for I don't know how many yards.
It was like 320 yards all on his own.
Yeah, Thomas Jones.
And they They put up like 48 points on I think I'm just going to say it, on me, because I was solely responsible for a couple of gaps. Yeah. And I'm not going to blame Hulk because he had a much better NFL career than I did. But it was embarrassing. And I can tell you, after that game, I thought to myself, I never want to play him again.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that guy.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, oh, well, yeah, but you're a competitor, man. You want to face these guys. Well, sometimes no. Sometimes, you know, you take a good enough ass kick and you're like, I don't want to see that guy anymore.
Yeah.
I don't want to play that game anymore. And I'm wondering where Oregon's mind is. If Oregon is in their mind thinking, oh, man, they got lucky. They got lucky here. They got lucky there. I can't wait to play him again. And they come in with the right attitude, then that's a good thing. But I don't think Mario Cristobal can come in and just do what he did defensively.
Yeah.
And so I suspect that he's going to put an extra big on the field and say, all right, let's make this freshman beat us with his arm, because they beat us on the ground. That Tavian Thomas ran all over Oregon. And my guess is Mario's going to say, let's make him beat us with the arm. I think that you'll see a variation of tight end routes that will break off those H-back movements. And instead of turning it into traps and blocks and double teams off the edge that force into the B's and C gaps, you're going to see, you know, quick chips into quick dig routes, and you'll see drag routes. You'll probably see some tight end middle screen, which they ran against Colorado so well. And I've got to imagine that they'll look at Oregon and say, oh, okay, they got an extra big in here. They're putting seven in the box, running another guy into the box. They're really focusing on stopping this run. And you'll see some variation. I don't think this game is going to look like the first game. I think the two coaching staffs are too smart.
Yeah. Do you like just the confidence level amongst Utah right now? Is this one that people are worried down there, or is it pretty confident, especially with, I mean, obviously the way the first one went?
Well, I get the feel that everybody's really confident.
Yeah.
I just feel like there's a heavy level of confidence because of the way it went. Yeah. You know, you watch that Oregon State game. We were talking about that punt block that went back for a touchdown. Right before the half, Oregon kicks it deep, and Little Britton Covey receives that thing and takes it back for a touchdown. To start the game, a freshman named Cole Bishop splits a tackle and the wing on the field goal block, or the field goal team, and kind of splits it, comes through free and gets a block on a field goal. And all of a sudden, Utah special teams are dominating along with what they were doing defensively. So, you know, you get a touchdown from your special teams, and you're defensively, you stop the run, get a little bit of a lead, and then they go away from the run.
Yeah.
Oregon stopped running.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because Oregon State kind of did the same thing against Oregon, which I still was blinking, thinking, wait a second, man, you keep pushing, even when you're down 21-3 or 24-3 or whatever it was. That Oregon State run game was so impressive when I watched it against Utah, but I can't imagine that this game goes anything like the first game, but I think everybody's pretty confident that Utah is going to get the win.
Yeah. All right. Well, we look forward to it, man. I thought this was going to be a colossal clash when they first met, and certainly didn't. The thing was over by half. So we wish you all the best down there. But from up here, we hope that Oregon has a little better fortune. And it was real good catching up with you. And I'm glad that all these years later, we can reminisce about knee drops and Lavelle Edwards tossing people out of spring games and those good times.
Hey, well, Sue, I'm on the long, lonely road between Provo and Vegas. You know the road very well, because when we got bored on campus, which was often, this was the road we took.
Well, drive safe, my friend, and have a very reasonable time in Vegas. I'll say that.
All right, brother. Take care.
We'll catch you at the Pac-12 Media Days. Hans Olsen down there. And he was a good dude and was also my host for my recruiting trip down there. And let's just say that Hans blurred the lines at what was and wasn't acceptable at Brigham Young University.
That's where you learned, huh?
That's where I learned. I suckled at the power teat of one Hans Olsen. So that you heard from the Utah perspective, thinks it will be a bit of a different game, but still very confident in the way they'll go about it. Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports, joins us next, and we'll get the Oregon take on things. Here, though, is Lynch with SportsCenter. You're listening to 1080 The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Suk on 1080 The Fan.
We got the Utah perspective, so let's head on down to Eugene for the Oregon side of things, and hopefully maybe a barbecue tip or two, because when I need to know about the Ducks or I need barbecue tips, I go to this man right here, 247's Matt Preem. Matt, what are we cooking up?
Oh, man, I don't got time for barbecue right now. I wish. I mean, I don't know what city I'm in, what day it's in. I'm going to Vegas for the second time in 10 days, which is always going to be interesting.
We'll get to the game here in 1 second. The Moorhead stuff, no one really surprised by that.
No.
I'm sure that you know, everyone has known this is coming. How much, you know, look, I know it's a bit of a sensitive subject, but look, we know that there just was is this just a bad fit philosophy-wise between Moorhead and Cristobal here? And, you know, even though it's been very successful, that this just wasn't going to work.
I don't know if we can say it didn't work.
Well, No. I'm not saying on the field, just, you know, long term that this was behind the scenes. This was probably a relationship that was Moorhead was not going to be here for a number of years is what I'm saying. On the field, obviously it worked. The offense looked great.
Yeah. I mean, I think the idea was always when he was hired was he wasn't going to be here for the long haul.
Yeah.
Because he was going to be named a head coach somewhere. I thought 2 years was probably what they were going to get. I thought 3 years would be like perfect scenario. Oh my gosh, the stars have completely aligned.
So the Akron thing, I think, is the one that, you know, you're like, look, if he leaves to take a head coach somewhere, I mean, Avalos leaves to Boise, that makes sense. But, you know, Akron, where the last coach made $500,000 and Moorhead's making more than a mil, I think that's the one where I think people look at and be like, we know that Cristobal, you know, is a bit heavy handed and can be a bit demanding and, you know, maybe conservative on offense. And that's where I kind of go down the road of, I wonder how much, you know, Moorhead, it just was maybe with the health scare and then just everything that maybe this was a grind that it wasn't a great behind the scenes fit.
It's certainly tough to work under Mario Cristobal. I don't think anyone would deny that because he is a grinder and he's a blue collar guy. That's going to, you know, you're going to have to work long hours. I'm sure there's days where he sleeps at the HTC center.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I think that can probably be wearing on some people, but yeah, I think with the Akron choice, you know, if that plays out like we all expect it to, you know, I think, yeah, your first perception is, oh, really, Akron? Like, maybe he could have done better. But at the same time, like, he came forward and said that, you know, the money aspect of it is the third most important thing for him when he makes these types of decisions of career moves. And, you know, he previously coached there for, you know, in his younger years of coaching. And I'm not trying to make him out as an old coach, but maybe there's some personal connection that we don't know about. He said his family's a steel worker family, and you know that's in a state where steel workers live. Yeah. And maybe he just culturally fits that dynamic. I don't know, you know, but I certainly thought he was going to be a guy that was, hey, maybe from a comparison standpoint, maybe Arizona of the ACC or the Big Ten comes calling, and that's, you know, the job that he gets. But you know, it's certainly interesting. I mean, yeah, you're right. Going to a place where the previous coach makes $500,000 and he's making $1 million here in Eugene, like that's going to be an adjustment.
Yeah. Any names that kind of kicked around, whether promoting from within or is it just, you know, far too early in any of this?
I think it's far too early for perfect names to lay out there. But Cristobal does have to make a decision here. Does he want to promote within? There are probably – there's probably one candidate I think could work, maybe two. McClendon, the receiver coach, was an offense coordinator previously at a Power 5 school. Mastro, the running backs coach, has been an offense coordinator previously. If he wants to make the internal promotion, that's a discussion and a debate, if that's the right move, at a later time. But if he does one of those, then he has to go and hire a quarterbacks coach because neither of those guys have any kind of experience coaching the quarterback position. And if he chooses not to promote from within and keep those in the offensive staff stays as it is, he's got to go out and find somebody that's a quarterback coach, has some history coaching quarterbacks. And that kind of makes the talent pool a little bit different. I mean, it would be pretty rocky if he goes out and hires a tight end special, you know, tight end offensive coordinator, or an offensive coordinator with a quarterback's background, or with an offensive line background to coach quarterbacks. That would just feel very off.
Yeah, considering the one biggest area that you would think you need to make a massive improvement on is quarterback. So we'll start there. You know, the difference between Anthony Brown, Utah, and Anthony Brown, Civil War, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that anymore. I'm going to get canceled. The game formerly known as the Civil War. I mean, that's night and day. I mean, you want to talk about just a difference in the game right there. You know, so what do we expect? Because we've seen Anthony Brown at Ohio State, and we've seen Anthony Brown against Oregon State, and that looks like one of the best teams in the country. The other 10 weeks, you get beat by Stanford and you get blown out by Utah. So which is it?
Yeah, that's unfortunately what you have to ride with this season with Anthony Brown at quarterback. And, you know, look, he leads the league in total offense. He's top three in passing. I think he's top three in QBR. He's, I think, the most productive quarterback running the football in the conference. I think if they win, and this is maybe a true sign of just how down the conference is at quarterback, but if they win this game, I think you kind of have to vote him first team all conference at quarterback, which is kind of strange to say. I think he should be in the discussion for some kind of, you know, conference award, whether it's honorable mention or first team. But it that speaks to maybe the depth of the quarterback room. Because you're right. Like, when he played against Utah, when he played against Stanford, he was bad.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if bad was is being harsh enough. It's probably being nice. You look at Oregon State. You look at him running and the decision making he made at UW. I think you look at the Washington State game. Those are performances where it's like, if Oregon says if we can get you to do that, I feel very confident Oregon's going to win that game against Utah. But you also have to acknowledge that he looked, you know, the offense looked bad at Utah. And part of that was because they got behind on first down. Yeah. And that's going to be the key in this game. Is doesn't matter if they throw or if they run on first down, you have to have positive yardage. You can't get into a second and 9, second and 10, second and 11 or further. Because if you have to ask Anthony Brown to throw the football 35 times, you're going to lose.
What is the kind of the confidence level? We're talking to someone down in Utah, and they know that there's going to be adjustments made, and I don't think that they necessarily think that Utah is going to blow Oregon out again. I mean, you look, even that first game, Oregon shot themselves in the foot a lot in the first half with drives, and then we had the punt return that broke their back. But they feel pretty confident that Utah is the flat-out better team. So just kind of the general feel that you're getting around this team right now, chomping at the bit, nervous, just, you know, the feeling here we are, what, 48 hours away from kick.
Well, as Utah should, they should feel very confident in this game. But speaking with Oregon's players this week, the coaching staff, this is a pissed off Oregon team. Yeah. And, you know, typically when we see pissed off Oregon teams, they play pretty well. They play pretty good and they're tough to beat. You know, Verone McKinley was very complimentary of Utah and came out and said, worst, you know, they embarrassed us and they have ultimate respect, but he was very confident in how his team would come out and play the second time around. He did not say that they would win, but he was talking as if this team has the ultimate confidence in themselves going down to Vegas and winning this football game against the Utes. They're confident. And I think they know that they screwed the pooch here a little bit 2 weeks ago, because they were the number three team in the country. The playoffs were right there. Seeing how things have played out, they are probably the number two in the rankings if they win that game.
Yeah.
They know what was at stake and how they performed, and they're pretty pissed off. So I anticipate we're going to see a pretty confident, pretty vocal, pretty excited Oregon team on Friday.
Yeah, that was the part that threw me for a loop is Oregon usually, you know, when they have a letdown, it's Stanford or it's Arizona State.
Yeah.
You know, when the biggest games, whether it's UCLA or Ohio State, especially the physical nature of it, you know, Utah wants to play in a phone box or a phone booth. And that's kind of Oregon's game, which was the part that surprised me a little bit, was just how physical that Utah was and that Oregon wasn't able to match it, because that's really what Cristobal, this whole program, is designed around we're going to be the more physical team. And I thought Utah kind of snatched their soul a little bit.
Oh, 100%. That was by far one of the weirdest games, is that Oregon lost. I mean, that's what I wrote about afterwards, was Oregon lost that game and didn't show any of its culture. I mean, when Mario Cristobal talks about his program, he says it's a team that Sage is never too big. They dominate the line of scrimmage. They're a physical football team. They don't make self-inflicted mistakes. And all of that showed up. They didn't do one of those things correctly in the Utah game, which is so strange because, like you said, you know, that's how Oregon wants to play, the way Utah plays. And so that's where I think this anger and this team being upset at itself comes from, is we just didn't even see the true Oregon team at all, even a sign of it in Salt Lake City. And they know they wasted an opportunity.
Yeah. So look into the crystal ball. Do you think Oregon gets it done, or is Utah too much?
I think Utah played probably its best game in maybe the Whittingham era a couple weeks ago. And I think Oregon played its worst game in the crystal ball era for sure, probably since the 2016 game when they lost to Washington 70-21. I think this Oregon team's probably going to play better. I think this Utah team's probably going to come down a little bit in terms of how well they play, how perfectly they played. And yeah, I think Oregon wins. I think it's going to shock me either way if this game is close or is a blowout. I think it's going to be tight all the way through. I think it's going to be one where turnovers will happen. I think each team kind of knows what the other's going to do. That's going to, you know, create some coaching aspects here, and boils down to just talent. And, you know, Oregon has boasted for a long time they've got, you know, the most talented team in the conference on paper, and it's time for them to prove it. And I think we get that. I think had this game been an Oregon win in Utah, I might pick Utah. It's tough to win twice, especially when it's this close between these two teams. And, you know, I think things are going to level out here a little bit, and both teams are going to kind of play to what their potential is, and that Oregon should be better, and they should win a close game.
All right, we'll travel safe down to Vegas, and we'll catch up with you in a week or so, and we'll find out whether you're going to San Antonio or if you're going to Pasadena. It looks like those are your two destinations. Matt Parham, 24/7 Sports. Really appreciate taking a couple minutes for us.
Yep.
All right, when we come back, I'll give my thoughts on that game, and then we'll move into Club 1080. You're listening to 1080 The Fan.
Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
So that old adage of it's hard to beat a team twice. Mike found this the other day. He tweeted it at me. That in the all-time NCAA, there's been 514 matchups repeated in the same season. 66% of the time, the same team won both. And then for conferences, it's about the same. It's like 65%. I thought it went up, but it didn't. It was 106 out of 165.
Yeah, smaller sample size.
Smaller sample size, but it's about the same. So, you know, that adage of it's hard to beat a team twice. I don't know how much that plays into it.
I would say that those numbers over all of those games would prove that as not accurate. We feel like it's harder to beat a team two times in a year, but if 65% of the time that's not the case, you can't make that statement anymore.
Yeah, and a lot of times, obviously, you're talking about bowl games, or, you know, now only recently have you had conference championships, because most of the time you don't play the same team twice, you know? So, again, when you're talking about a bowl game, you may be talking about something that bowl games to me are very weird because it's a month off. I don't think bowl games necessarily are indicative, especially if they're not championship-level games, are indicative of who's the overall better team that year, because a lot of that is motivation of who wants to be there, and you have a month off. I mean, it's a weird thing. Imagine getting to the NFL and then being like, hey, we're going to take a month off, and then you'll go and you know, play one game that means everything. It's just kind of a weird, funky thing. I thought that Oregon was going to win the game against Utah. I actually felt pretty good about it. I just thought the way Utah wants to play is going to go in line with the way Oregon wants to play, and I thought Oregon's athletes would be just that much better. I'm going to still lean towards here going with the percentages, and I think Utah gets them. I think if Anthony Brown plays the way he's capable of, that's the X factor. But I've seen Anthony Brown play two really good games, and he wasn't bad against UCLA. He kind of went through his stretches there, but I just look at the physicality that Utah had, and I get that
His two very good games, Ohio State and Oregon State?
And Oregon State.
Yeah.
If that Anthony Brown shows up, Oregon will win. Because they were moving the ball against Utah, and then they made dumb penalties, and they fell behind the chains, and they couldn't run the ball. First off, falling behind the chains and dumb penalties, that's something that Oregon does, right? And they just have always been able to overcome it. They wear teams down. I don't think they're going to wear down Utah. I do think that Utah was the more physical team, and I think that Utah's scheme in that run game that Hans was talking about, running the 12 and 13 personnel, I think that gave Oregon fits. And if Oregon does want to come down and try to play eight in the box, we know that you can throw the ball on Oregon, right? That is not a strength of their team. So I do think this is going to be a much closer game. I don't think there's a huge gap between these two teams. And, you know, I'm probably now, you know, going to be jinxing Utah because I thought Oregon was win the first one they're going to blow out. Now I'll flip it and I'll pick Utah. There is just something about the physical nature in which Utah was able to handle them. And I do think that that physical nature and the way Utah has been playing since that Oregon State game, they really haven't had a bad performance, whereas Oregon has been a little bit up and down all year. So I know it's wishy-washy, but if Oregon brings their best, they will beat Utah. But at this point, I just can't rely on Oregon bringing their best. And Utah over the last, five or six games has just brought their A game. So I'll lean towards Utah, but I think this is going to be a very close competitive game. I do not think this ends up being a blowout either direction. And again, that game Friday right here on the Fan, we will not have a prime time, but we will have a ton of pregame coverage leading you up to the kick and then the game right here. All right, when we come back, let's get into Club 1080. We'll talk a little Spotify playlists, a compare and contrast as we do our Spotify wrap on the year of 2021. You're listening to Primetime right here on 1080 The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.